Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and on this podcast, we bring you honest and soulful conversations about all facets of human sexuality. This episode is brought to you by Cocoon, a new web browser that gives you absolute privacy and total security. Go to getcocoon.com/edu to download the browser for free so you can stop worrying about your online privacy once and for all. That's getcocoon.com/edu. From your new browser, go to pleasuremechanics.com and find our complete podcast archive, our online multimedia courses, and of course, a way to get in touch with us. We love hearing from you and hearing your thoughts about this podcast episode or anything you want us to cover on future episodes. We really do love hearing from you. Someone made me cry the other day. It's true. Thanks, Ben. All right. So in today's episode, we're continuing our conversation inspired by Esther Perel's new book, The State of Affairs, which is all about infidelity and monogamy and how to do monogamy better so our lives aren't crushed under infidelity, aren't burned down by the flames of an affair. So as we're reading this book from Esther Perel, we're exploring the themes that come up that are really at the heart of all relationships and eroticism. Whether or not your relationship is affected by cheating, the ideas around infidelity are really relevant to us all. We're having this discussion over at patreon.com/pleasuremechanics, which is our online community platform where you can pledge $5 a month to support our work and become part of this private, secure online platform where we're having a book club about this book, where I'm sharing bonus resources and worksheets and bonus episodes to help guide your implementation of these ideas, and where you can have chat with us and we can answer your questions in a really lovely organic community conversation. So go to patreon.com/pleasuremechanics to be part of our online community and get bonus resources around these conversations, because I know they're big ones. And in our last episode, we talked all about how to have explicit conversations about monogamy so you know what you're agreeing to and so you cannot feel caged and entrapped by the implicit assumptions of monogamy that can shut down our erotic vitality. And in that conversation, we got to some places talking about permission and what you're allowed to do. And today we want to talk about jealousy. And this force of jealousy that can cause us to want to put a cage around our lover and throw away the key forever. Mm-hmm. And how to use jealousy, instead of it being a monster, how to make it our friend. Because I think it is possible. So Charlotte, I want to start with your thoughts, because I know after we recorded our last episode, you were feeling like this conversation about explicit monogamy and allowing our partners to have more erotic freedom might be really challenging for people. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how it might be related to jealousy?
Yeah, I was aware that I felt like our last episode was so full. Like, there are so many different options. There's so many different sexual experiences one can have, desire, create in this world, and then in this digital world that is, you know, we're the first generation that's ever had these options, and it's a lot. And some people may never have thought of some of these options for themselves or their partners. And I do think it's valuable, of course, to talk about them. But I'm aware that it's a lot and overwhelming, perhaps. How does this relate to jealousy? Whew. There are so many ways to be jealous. There are so many reasons or places or spaces that we can be jealous in, and it's important to look at. But one of the things I was really inspired by in Perel's book was how she talked about jealousy can be an incredible fire within a long-term relationship, when we can remember that our partner is not ours exclusively. In reality, we have this implicit agreement that that is the case when we say I do, or when we choose one another without a marriage contract, but we are ours together. But that remembering that others could want them, they could want others, allowing jealousy to exist in a way is vulnerable and can be scary, but can be really arousing because we remember that they are a whole person that we get to choose and that we are choosing each other. But it can be a way that we can really see our partner as their own person, not just ours that's hitched to us, that's, you know, caged in with us, but they are a free person that has their own eroticism that then we get to play with, but it exists on its own, and that that can be a beautiful fuel for a long-term relationship.
Yeah, she even talks about how we have a delusion that our partner is ours forever, and when we get in touch with the existential reality that death can take our partner anytime, and we really tap into that, that that alone can fuel more eroticism, that we have no guarantees of how much time we have together, and how Americans specifically are really uncomfortable with death and with this existential reality that nothing is permanent. And so we pretend and we create our whole dialogue around, like, once I have my partner, they're mine forever, and therefore I don't have to work for it, and I don't have to create desire anymore. Like, the whole question of, can you desire what you already have? If we never truly have one another, then that desire can continue to live. And jealousy really comes up in her book a lot, and she frames it in a really interesting way that globally and historically, jealousy has been understood as part of human eros, and it can fuel that wanting and that craving and that erotic possession of one another. And of course, it can spiral into violence and really painful ways. Like, jealousy can be a vicious monster that can attack your life. But she talks about how when we have moved past the idea of monogamy as ownership and marriage as ownership, and it's now about a romantic contract, our conversations around infidelity have shifted away from the passionate fires of jealousy to more of a formal breach of contract. Like, I feel wronged by you, you lied to me. And that's a much colder edge to cut apart a relationship.
And interesting, she named that as an American phenomenon, that, for instance, in Brazil, it's much more about the heartbreak of somebody, you know, of love being lost, as opposed to the lying. Yeah. You know, she spoke about how lying is assumed in all sorts of ways, but the passion and the love being lost was the pain, was the painful part. Whereas it's not so here. And that's really interesting that we don't like to admit the vulnerability of having lost somebody's love, that that is just too painful.
Yeah, and of course, we are proponents of moving past the idea of monogamy as ownership. It's a lot what we talked about in our last episode, and we'll talk about it again. But I do like Esther's line that our cultural ideals are sometimes too impatient with our human insecurities. And we can have an ideal about not owning one another and giving one another erotic freedom, but the real human emotional experience is sometimes felt as raging jealousy and insecurity and vulnerability. And so how do we give space in this conversation for jealousy? How do we stop pretending that we're above jealousy and, oh, I don't feel jealous ever? I give my partner total freedom. Because I think one of the things you were responding to in our last episode is when we were talking about all these options, from exploring online porn, having online chats with someone, being part of a fetish community, flirting with others in public, cuddling with friends, having sex with other people. When we really acknowledge all of the options our partner has every day, whether or not we talk about it, whether or not they tell us about it, you can start feeling jealous and vulnerable and insecure about your relationship. That's going to come up in these conversations. And so how do we make friends with jealousy? I think this is the question. So traditionally, jealousy has been thought of as a green-eyed monster. I think Shakespeare made that up, but it's been used all throughout literature as this idea of jealousy kind of comes up in you and becomes this rageful, vengeance-seeking, like, that is mine, I want it, and I will do anything I can to continue to possess it.
Mm.
She talks about the difference between jealousy and envy, whereas envy relates to something you want but don't have. Jealousy relates to something you have and are afraid of losing. So when we feel like we own our partner and their sexuality is ours, and we feel like their sexuality is straying and is going in other directions, we can feel so jealous that we will do anything to recapture their attention and slay the others and recapture what's ours. And jealousy has led to a lot of murder and violence. And when we feel like we own our partner and we lose them, that jealousy can indeed become a monster. And it's a real force we need to reckon with. But how do we tame that monster? How do we make friends with it so we can recognize these emotions of jealousy that are fueled really by insecurity and vulnerability, which are some of the most uncomfortable human emotions? And how do we get more active at the root of jealousy so it doesn't rage out of control and become this violent force that's going to destroy our relationships and our lives? Some people are more jealous than others, and I think it's important to know about yourself. What are you feeling jealous of? How often does that feeling come up? And where is it directed? And often in romantic relationships, it comes up around attraction and desire. So whereas you believe your marriage means that your partner has chosen you, you are the chosen one, you won the race, and you feel like your partner should be attracted to you and only you for the rest of your life. If they express attraction, or you find them looking at porn with women that look nothing like you, or you feel like they're getting too close to a coworker, that straying of attraction prompts this jealousy of that attention, that desire should be mine. It should be on me, and I'm jealous of the other objects of their attention and their desire, and I need to pull their attention back towards me. It's a real possessive energy. And when we look at that moment, when you notice, maybe you're sitting in a restaurant. Let's take a really mild level of jealousy. You're sitting in a restaurant and you're trying to have a conversation with your partner and you're trying to be on a date night and you're trying to be intimate after a busy week. And you notice your partner is looking at a pretty woman across the room. What do you feel jealous of there? Is it the woman's beauty? Is it her youth? Is it a body that you feel like you once had and no longer have? Or are you more jealous of his attention and the straying of his attention, and you feel like you want that back? So in that moment, you could either simmer in this feeling of like, I'm not pretty enough anymore. I'm not good enough to capture his attention. He wants all these other women. He feels sexually attracted to other people. And you can let that fester. Or you can reach across the table, hold his hand, and say, I'm here with you. Can you be here with me? And just gently retrain that attention back. Or you might even say, I see that beautiful woman. What are you noticing about her? You know, what's grabbing your attention? Let's talk about this, right? So there's strategies to gently feel that little monster growing, put it on a leash, and retrain your attention and your intention back to the moment and ask for your partner to share that moment with you. And in that, you're admitting a little bit of vulnerability, right? You're saying, I get that that woman's pretty. I'm not feeling as pretty as her, but I'm your wife. Please pay attention to me and let's share this moment again. And that just kind of prevents the monster from growing and festering inside you and spiraling out of control. And you have to do this again and again. Every time you realize jealousy is coming up, you have to figure out, what is that jealousy about? What am I jealous of? How can I ask for it? So maybe your partner's going and playing tennis a lot, and you're feeling like they're getting too close with their tennis partner, and they're spending all this time at the country club. Maybe you're jealous of their time freedom, and you're realizing you're spending your whole weekend doing chores. Like, when do I get to play tennis or go on a walk or do what I like to do? And the conversation's not about their cute tennis partner, which would be easy to make the target. It's really about the time. And having more equitable shares of the house chores so you can have a little more time freedom. Does this make sense to you, Char? Char. I use my little pet name for you on the podcast. I don't know if I've ever done that.
Yeah. I feel like getting intimate with your own experience of jealousy and pinpointing what you feel, is it actually envy, which Perel talks about as being
noticing something you want but don't have.
Right. Or is it genuine jealousy, which is something you're afraid of losing, something that you have and love and are afraid of losing? And figuring out what is about your own insecurity, and that's something you could look at on your own, versus something that you want, that you desire. And if it's about what you desire, how can you amp that up to bring spark back into your world? Whether that's just because it starts internally, where you feel the desire for your partner when somebody else is flirting with them, or you feel your own desire when someone's flirting with you, and you remember that you are an erratic being that is desirable in this world, and your partner's lucky to be with you, and you kind of bring that to back to your world. So there's just, I love this idea that it can be perhaps at light levels or perhaps at full-blown intense levels, but it's easier to start with the light levels of just playing with a little bit of bringing the erotic charge and allowing there to be a little bit more jealousy. Sometimes we really stay away from it and try not to go anywhere near that to protect ourselves or our partner. And it's interesting to think about just playing with it a little bit in order to fuel a little bit more passion and lust and love in our own relationship.
I want to talk about using jealousy as erotic fuel, mm-hmm. and how she talks in the book a lot about how after an affair, couples have the best sex they've ever had, fueled by jealousy. But first, a thanks to our sponsor. We'd like to thank Cocoon for sponsoring this podcast. Cocoon is a free web browser, you know, like Chrome or Firefox, that solves three separate problems all in one. Cocoon gives you absolute privacy, total security, and global accessibility. The truth is, websites are constantly tracking your actions and selling this information to the highest bidder. You're never really alone when you're browsing online. If you want to be wrapped in a cocoon of safety, go to getcocoon.com/edu and download your free browser. And this browser uses new technology to create a shield around your browsing activity, so it's not accessible by any cookies, any robots. I never understood why they're called cookies. But they won't track your behavior and they won't sell your information to the bureaus that are tracking all of us all the time and know what you're interested in and what you're doing online. You are finally safe and secure while you're online with Cocoon. Go to getcocoon.com/edu for your free download and start browsing in your cocoon of safety and security.
And privacy.
And thanks to Cocoon for sponsoring this podcast. Now, let's talk about how jealousy can create erotic charge. Esther talks in the book, I like how you call her Perel and I call her Esther. It's kind of funny. She talks about in the book how often after an affair, couples will start having really hot, passionate sex again. And a lot of the time, this is because their complacency has been shaken mm-hmm. by the revelation of infidelity. Seeing your partner through other people's eyes and seeing them as desirable and seeing them as someone who would want and someone who has sexual agency and who would cheat all of a sudden makes them much more desirable than just seeing them as the husband and the father to your children who takes care of the lawn. And we can really domesticate and desexualize one another over time. And all of a sudden, when you realize that they're being sexual with someone else...
Or that they're wanted by someone else.
And that they're wanted by someone else, you become hyper aware of their desirability. And you start seeing those broad shoulders, and you start seeing that cute scruff of his 5 o'clock shadow, and you start seeing how smart he is and how desirable that is, right? Like, we see their best qualities again. And this can create really passionate sex, even in the midst of a total breakdown of the relationship. She talks about this strange thing where you're in therapy and crying and then going home and fucking each other crazily. And we don't have to wait to the point of crisis to use this energy. And so if you want to transform jealousy into erotic potential, we need to create enough distance that you can see your partner as a sexually autonomous being. And that might be in that restaurant when he's looking at that beautiful woman, sitting back in your chair and just for a moment fantasizing about what would happen if he approached her. How would she respond to him? What would he look like while he was trying to seduce her? Play that out just for a moment, and then remember that this hot guy has seduced you, has chosen you to direct his erotic energy towards, to create his life with. And just remember that in that drama, we're all sexual beings walking around in the world together. There's endless possibility. And I kind of wish that spontaneous orgies broke out more often than they do. In my fantasies, it happens. But we're constantly engaging with one another. And if we can bring a little bit more flirtation to that, and more charisma, and eye contact, and smiles, then we start realizing that erotic potential is all around us. And as long as your partner is choosing you, you can feel that incredible feeling of being wanted and desired and chosen. As soon as that feeling goes away and it's just like, oh, we're stuck together, let's make the best of it, that kind of deadens that erotic charge. But if you remember that in this sea of possibilities, with all these gorgeous humans walking around with our genitals covered only by a little piece of fabric, right? Like, our society is so strange in that it's hypersexual in some ways and then completely desexualized in others. But there's so much potential there. And yet, you're choosing one another. For me, there's a big erotic charge there. And I think especially being two bisexual queer women, I'm really aware of this. And Charlotte's kind of oblivious, but men are attracted to her all the time and are gazing at her and looking at her body and her beautiful breasts. And you're totally oblivious to it, but I watch it from afar. And I know that you desire men enough to want to be with them, but still you choose me. And still we come home to each other, and still we get in bed with each other at the end of every day. And still, with all of my flaws and strange health stuff, it's my body you choose to touch. And I really tap into that. You know, I used to get kind of insecure and jealous when I watched men flirt with you. Because they have a penis and I'll never have a penis. And so I kind of envied that. There was this idea of like envying masculinity because it's something I could never give to you in that way. And over the years, as I found myself more secure in our relationship and in who I am, it's transmuted into this real turn on for me. When I see men gaze at you and recognize your beauty, I remember to see it, and I let my eyes follow your curves the same way they do, and I'm just, like, feeling really proud of being yours, and of having our relationship, and of being able to sexually satisfy you, and of knowing how your body works, and of knowing what you look like when you're having an orgasm. I have all of that knowledge that they'll never have, and so they can look, but there's still this sense of we're together in it. And then I reach my edges sometimes. And this is where you have to really pay attention, because you can eroticize jealousy. And then there are moments where it just feels too vulnerable. And, you know, you have certain ex-lovers that you're really close to, and we'll go to their wedding. And in those moments, I had to be real with you and say, you know, how are you feeling at this wedding and watching this really hot, athletic, tall, handsome man get married? like, do you wish you were up there with him? And then we have to have that conversation where you say, like, sure, there are pieces of it that I crave, but I don't think we'd be happy together, and this is why I'm happy with you. And I need to express that vulnerability and ask for reassurance. And I think that's a strategy here, too, is when you find your edges of jealousy, there's sometimes you just need to be reassured, and you're not always going to be confident enough to eroticize jealousy. There may be moments where you need to be held a little bit and allowed to be tender and vulnerable, and told that you're still chosen. You might not always feel that inherently. And I think especially if you're sick or if you're dealing with stressful things or if you're out of work, like a lot of men get really vulnerable if they're not financially providing for their family. And they might feel really jealous of other guys who are more successful. Like everyone has their places, whether it's physical beauty, financial success, whatever it is, there are places where we feel vulnerable and we need to identify that and allow ourselves to be insecure sometimes. So we don't sublimate that and we don't hide it and we don't pretend to be strong when really we're feeling weak. And that's part of taming jealousy too, is knowing where your weak points are and asking your partner not to push those buttons. You know, like asking for some tenderness in certain areas, and then in other areas, you know, play and flirt and be erotic out in the world and I can handle it, but maybe it's certain people or certain areas that I don't want to be provoked.
That makes so much sense. And we have to feel those things and share about them and talk about them and be honest about them, because it's really vulnerable and scary to feel that insecurity. And I think our culture is so obsessed with not being insecure in a way, like we don't have a lot of freedom to really be honest about when you are feeling uncomfortable and like you're not enough.
How do you feel about often a place insecurity is expressed is with using porn? And women say, I'll never look like those porn stars, I'll never have that body, so when you masturbate to porn, it makes me jealous because I feel like that's what you really want, and then I don't feel like my body is enough, and then I don't feel like I can relax during sex, and then we don't have the sex we want, and then we're both, you know, like it can spiral from this place of her tits are bigger than mine to I won't let you touch me in bed. And so how do we acknowledge insecurity but not let it control us and not be unrealistic about bodies and our capabilities, you know? Do you have any answers to that?
It's such a huge question, and people are really dealing with these issues. And unfortunately, I don't think I have any magic answers for that. It's challenging. I mean, I feel like we can ask our partners, like, what are you turned on by? Is it their body? Or, you know, does it make... I think you have to talk to them. Like, does it make you feel like mine? I mean, it's... I don't know what the answer to these are. Do you? I mean...
Well, I think part of it is acknowledging fantasy versus reality, and that we need to situate pornography in the realm of fantasy. So just like we'll go to a romantic movie and see these unrealistic portrayals of romance and Hugh Hefner. Who am I talking about? Who just died.
Sorry.
Hugh, who's the British guy who's in the rom-coms?
I think he's not... You mean Hugh...
I can't get rid of the idea of Hugh Hefner in a rom-com now. Whatever. The leading man, he's probably even outdated. Showing up with flowers at dawn and proclaiming his love in sign language or whatever the fuck they do in the movies. That's not how we live and breathe and express romance in everyday life. So just like we can acknowledge that's a fantasy and still enjoy it, we can acknowledge that porn is a fantasy that our partners are enjoying, and in that fantasy there might be huge tits and tiny waists and big butts that bounce in the just that way, or and whatever he's looking at. It's not always the typical porn star body that attracts our clicks online. Like, they might be looking at things that are so extreme, they're never going to be part of your sex life. Acknowledging that as fantasy, and then when you come back into reality, of you're my sexual partner. I know your boobs aren't that big, but I still enjoy touching them. Sinking back into that reality and recognizing, again, they've chosen you for a myriad of reasons. They want to give you sexual pleasure, and allowing ourselves to receive that attention. So many people don't receive it when it's offered and then complain it's not there. So receiving the affection, receiving the compliments, believing our partner wants to pay attention to us, wants to touch us, wants to give us pleasure, wants to bring us to orgasm. And the deeper we can go into that reality and find those extraordinary and funny and unexpected moments of romance and seduction and pleasure and affection together. It never looks like the movies, but it's so much better in all these ways because it's not scripted, it's real. And the deeper we can go into that, then we can acknowledge that our partner has these fantasy worlds that we're not a part of, but it can't touch the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're the one that shared that quivering orgasm last night. You're the one that tended to them when they were sad because their mom had passed or whatever it is. Like, that's the real life you're sharing together. And then the jealousy doesn't have as much power over you because you're confident in what you are sharing. And so I think that one of the skills here is being more confident and real with what your relationship is about. And this is what I was saying, like, starting to date you who are attracted to men and had all these like big powerful men wanting you, and how am I ever going to compete to that? That was my insecurity talking. And over the years, as we had this delightful, fun relationship and we got to know each other on this soul level and we wove our lives together, I'm not worried about any powerful man stealing you away from me. And so his attention can touch you, but it's not a threat. And when we do feel threatened, when we do feel vulnerable, we need to look at that and either choose to reinvest in our relationship and strengthen it, or to admit our vulnerability and ask for reassurance. But we can't live in a relationship that feels threatened by simple flirtation, by simple eye gazing with someone else, by noticing desirable, attractive people out in the world, by fantasizing with porn. These things should not have enough power over a good, healthy, thriving relationship.
And yet they do.
And yet they do.
Yeah. Ideally, they should not. And if they are feeling really threatening, there's something to look at. Is it that you don't feel like your relationship is feeling as strong as you want? Are you not feeling paid attention to enough? Do you feel like you're not loving your body as much as you could? I feel like, what is it that you desire in your fantasy life? You know, a lot of people were really turned on by the 50 Shades of Grey dude. And, you know, that is a total fantasy. This incredibly rich billionaire flying people around. You know, you look at what your fantasy is. And I feel like that can give some context to a partner's fantasy. When you understand the objects of their desire are sometimes just fantasy, not what they want in their reality. It can be a really helpful
or mind counter. Those fantasies for the desires you need to bring into your relationship to be more fulfilling for one another, right? So you go from Christian Grey and 50 Shades of Grey to I want my husband to be more dominant, and here's how we're going to do that, and we're going to enroll in the Pleasure Mechanics Kinky Sex course to learn how to do that safely, right? So you back engineer your fantasies into your desires, find the skills, find the communication to enact that, and that then strengthens the relationship. But what Esther is talking a lot about is how affairs can either make or break a marriage. So they can be a launching point for a recommitment, for finding a new way of being in a marriage together, or they'll break up the marriage and reveal the weaknesses of the marriage. And she has this great line that jealousy may in fact be the last glowing ember of Eros in an otherwise burned out relationship, and therefore it is also the means of reigniting the fire. And I think this image speaks to how complacent we get in our relationship sometimes, how we don't pay attention, we don't invest in a great sex life, we don't invest in expanding our erotic repertoire, and that fire that was so hot at the beginning slowly burns out, and it's only when we realize that we have like one last glowing ember that we choose to reignite. And instead, how do we throw logs on the fire more regularly? How do we fan the flames? How do we blow on that fire to keep it going over years? Right? It has to be like the Olympic torch or whatever. Like, it has to keep burning. And we can't allow a crisis to be what we choose to reignite. Because then there's just so much work to undo. And this book is really breaking my heart in so many ways, thinking about couples hurting one another so much, but then realizing they still love one another and having to get through all of that doubt and guilt and blame and shame to reconnect. How do we get to these core issues before a crisis? How do we do the work in an ongoing way so we don't hurt one another and then have to recapture a marriage when it's on its last thread?
I mean, this is informs so much of what we do all the time. Yeah. I feel like this is why we create all of these resources for people to be able to commit to their relationship and learn new skills and create novelty and expand their pleasure and feel desire for one another out of those experiences so that it can a long-term relationship can still feel delicious and interesting and like you're exploring new terrain together always. You don't need another person for that, but you can keep deepening in your experience of your body and pleasure together. And I feel like it's really awesome and inspiring.
We're awesome. But I think, you know, so much of what we teach, there's the physical techniques of pleasure. There's giving one another massage and continuing to pay attention to one another's pleasures and bodies that way. There's learning new skills like spanking so you can have that kinkier, rougher sex you want.
Safely.
And then there's these skills like paying attention to jealousy. Mm. There's these skills like talking about your vulnerabilities. And they're just as important, right? And we're starting to create resources around these things. We're starting to create worksheets and conversation guides that we're sharing with our patrons at patreon.com/pleasuremechanics and that will be part of future courses. But these conversations, I think now, especially 11, 12 years into our relationship, we're acknowledging that these micro communications, these conversations about the hardest parts of being human, right? Like the fact that we get raging jealousy over a cuter woman, the fact that we feel so insecure about our financial position, or the fact that losing our job shuts down erections, these are all part of being human sexual beings, right? And we need to acknowledge all of this just as much as we acknowledge the multiple screaming simultaneous orgasms, so we can have real long-term relationships and be sexual beings and continue to be sexually fulfilled and not let things like infidelity burn down what we've invested so much in. Because we do believe in long-term relationships. Like, I'm so happy I found you of all beings on this planet to share my life with. We have a child. I want to watch her grow up together. And I recognize these places where if we don't do the work, the exit signs are all around us. It's too easy to think about other options in today's world. It's too easy to get on a dating app and be like, well, all these cute people are liking me. I've got options. Those options are not comparable to this person you've chosen to invest in. And sometimes relationships need to end. And I believe in that too. And we are not anti-divorce. Sometimes people's second or third relationship is their best one. You need to also know when to move on and when you're just not serving and supporting one another. But so many of the stories we hear are you really love one another. You're devoted to each other. You're dedicated to each other. And you just need the skills and resources and support to keep that love going. And transforming jealousy is a big part of that. And instead of being insecure and being vulnerable in secret and quashing that feeling until it like just overwhelms you, we need to put that green-eyed monster on a leash. We need to learn how to transform jealousy into vulnerability and conversation and finding our desires with jealousy, noticing what you're jealous of and transforming that into what you want more of, what you want to recapture. And that can be a beautiful place to start restoking your embers before your fire burns out forever.
So really mining your jealousy for the information, not being afraid of it and shutting it out altogether or blaming the other person for making you feel that way, but discovering what it is telling you.
Yeah, and then an extension of this is the idea of compersion, which comes out of the ethical non-monogamy community, where you actually get off on watching your partner be with other people. You find pleasure in your partner's pleasure with other people. And many people will never get to that place of compersion, but it can be like micro compersion. Like if you notice your partner is really excited when he comes home from working in the wood shop with his buddies and really loves like discovering woodworking skills. Why do I always bring up woodworking? I don't know. Maybe there's something in me that wants to learn how to use a hammer. But noticing your partner's pleasure in that and then supporting them and being like, yes, you do your thing. You go, you grow in these new directions. And I'm enjoying that because you're more erotically alive. I think that's what compersion means in a lot of long-term relationships, is supporting your partner's growth and pleasure in ways that have nothing to do with you, and not always having to do things together, and not always having to watch the same TV shows, but, you know, pop them a bowl of popcorn, sit them down with a horror movie that you'd never want to watch, and then know that they're going to love it. And ask them why they liked it later and like engage with them about their pleasures that are not about you instead of being jealous and wishing that they would watch, you know, the baking show with you instead. Like you can have separate pleasures that don't have to be sex with other people, but separate pleasures, separate sources of erotic vitality, and support one another in that and get off on the fact that your partner's having fun that doesn't include you. I think that's where compersion has to live and breathe in a lot of relationships, is what are the ways you can have more fun and be more excited and pleasured in life that have nothing to do with me, and how can I support and facilitate that?
And what does that look like for me also?
And then I have to do the same, and then we're both a little more charged up, and then when we do come together, if we come together. All right. So I will post a resource about jealousy and the conversations around jealousy and some tools around jealousy at patreon.com/pleasuremechanics. And for $5 a month, you can be part of that inner circle, part of that community, and get all of these bonus resources and be part of the conversation that's happening there. We're getting ready to have an interview with Esther Perel, which I'm so excited for and a little bit nervous for because she's a big role model and mentor. I'm going to go spend the day with her on November 11th and be able to ask her questions, and I will report fully on Patreon. So we will continue to bring you a weekly podcast for free, but to be part of our inner circle and get more resources and more conversations and more pleasure from the pleasure mechanics, go to patreon.com/pleasuremechanics and pitch in $5 a month to help this show go and help us grow and bring you more of what you love from us. You can also go to pleasuremechanics.com, where you'll find a complete podcast archive and our online multimedia courses, which are a great way for you to invest in your erotic life and continuing to grow as sexual beings together, so other people can be jealous of your mad sexual skills.
And your thriving sexy relationship.
How's that? Make others jealous of how awesome you are. All right. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.